Recordings has now started. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the IRTP Part D Working Group call on the 8th of September 2014. On the call today, we have Alan Greenberg, Volker Greeman, Holly Raich, James Fliddell, Aubrey Doria, Graham Bunton, Barbara Knight, Angie Graves, Bob Mountain, and Arthur Zonenberg. We have apologies from Paul Diaz and Kevin Erdman. From staff, we have Amy Bibbins, Lars Hoffman, Marika Konings, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, James.
Thanks, Terry, and good morning, good day, everyone. Welcome to our call for September 8th. First up, does anyone have any updates to their statements of interest? If so, please raise your hand at this time. Okay, seeing none, does anyone have any suggested edits or comments to the agenda that was circulated by Lars and was posted in the Adobe Connect room? Okay, great. So the focus of this call will be particularly on item number 2 on our agenda, which is the review of the final report. We have some changes that we need to go through that were collected via our previous discussion. And they also, I think most importantly, is we have a number of comments from ICANN staff, the Global Domains Division. Am I saying that right? GDD? Anyway, some of those comments are fairly, I think, cosmetic, but a few of them, I think, are fairly significant and will require some extensive discussion by the group. So, let's go ahead and dive into those, but just recognizing that those staff comments need to be addressed. I think there's a few of them in particular. So with that, I think, Lars, if you don't mind, if we could start, the document is it synced or unsynced? We can kind of go where the first comment from the GDD team, and we'll go through these in order. And I have some notes here, but I'll hold off on my comments until we've had a chance to hear from anyone on the group who wants to weigh in. So the first comment here is on page 14. You can see that the comment is tacked on to the impact of this recommendation, 4.2.1.4. And the GDD team says the group should the group discuss the financial costs versus benefits as part of an impact. This is to the recommendation number 2 that the dispute provider would be established to handle TDRPs. I think that this is something that we discussed during our conversations, and I think that we need here to understand that the financial costs, I believe, costs and benefits are particularly aimed at registrants and not necessarily at the dispute resolution providers or registries or registrars, but I think from the focus of registrants. So does anyone have any comments or thoughts on this staff comment? Okay. Well, they get harder from here, so I just wanted to make sure everyone has an opportunity to weigh in. Lars, I don't see the working group having a burning desire to dive into this here, but Holly's up. Holly, go ahead.
Yeah, it's just picking up. I think it was probably a discussion a month or so ago, and I think it was Arthur's. But it was to say one of the concerns I think he had, and perhaps we have, was the cost to if we're dropping the possibility of a dispute resolution process for registrants, then what is the cost to a registrant to proceed with a complaint if it's a complaint that ICANN itself cannot take up under the compliance issue? So I'd be tempted to just put an additional line in there, including the cost or something that actually reflects the concern that we had probably about a month ago. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Holly. Thanks for the reminder. I thought most of our discussions on the financial cost-benefit impact was relevant to our recommendation to remove the registry level.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Would we refer to that conversation here?
James, Holly, continuing. I don't think we do here, but part of the, I think it was the issue that Arthur raised, as I said, it was if we have removed the possibility of a registrant, that just, I think that was part of what we decided earlier on was just too difficult, then part of what we had decided was, look, we need to have something on the ICANN website that's a lot better than what's there now, and those, all that conversation is reflected in this report and, you know, well reflected. But if there is not a remedy for registrants through the RAA in compliance, then do they have to have a recourse to something that's expensive? I think that was, as I say, it was a discussion that was a while ago, but I think that was part of it. Arthur, if you can recall, maybe that was, maybe I'm saying it wrong, but that's what I think that we said some time ago. Thanks.
I think you're capturing it accurately, Holly. My only question or concern is that that's a different recommendation. This one is talking about the reporting requirement.
Okay.
And that's where I'm kind of a little confused, because you're absolutely right. Within the context of that previous discussion about the impact of registrants, we definitely need to highlight the cost-benefit impact. But here, the recommendation is that the dispute provider shall report any decision made with respect to a transfer dispute initiated under TDRP. All decisions will be published in full over the Internet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel like, you know, if we want to say something here, it would be this is an added cost for dispute resolution providers, but we'll have the benefit of providing a basis, you know, a precedent for, you know, future disputes and some transparency into the process. Or I don't know. I see a green check mark from Arthur, and Alan has his hand raised.
Yeah, I'm right on the same page as you are. Yes, it's an additional cost, but it's part of transparency and making these things not only transparent but usable as precedent. So, yes, but tough. We could put the line in or leave it out, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
Yeah, and we don't have Christine on the call, but one recommendation, and let's see if the group can get behind this idea, is that we say something to that effect, that we expect that the cost to dispute resolution providers will be negligible, maybe negligible is the wrong word, minor, or relatively minor, something like that. But the benefits to transparency and building a data set that can be referenced for future disputes will be extremely valuable. And then just leave it at that.
That's fine.
James, it's Alan. That's certainly fine, but I'll point out we don't do detailed financial analysis on everything else. So, but the point was raised. That kind of sentence addresses it. Let's go on.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think we have to go into gory details about the costs. I agree with you, Alan. Okay, and I've got a green check mark from Alan. Arthur as well. So, okay. I think Lars, you good with that?
Again.
No, not good with that. Okay. What did we do? We need to say. Oh, go ahead, Lars.
No, sorry, James. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I just had an issue with the button. Everything is good. I've got it, and I'm happy with it.
All right. Thank you. All right. So, if you could please direct us to the next staff comment, unless it's one of our Alan had. Two comments, unless we run across his on the way. But the next comment, I believe, is on page 16. Oh, there you are. Thank you. And the general comment here from GDD is that the working group appears to be suggesting specific language to the policy rather than just, you know, general concepts or principles that should be reflected. I really don't have strong feelings on this. Let me explain why, and then I'll open up a queue. Is that I think on some issues there's a danger of working groups becoming overly prescriptive in writing the language of policy, and on some issues we certainly have seen where staff has said they weren't given enough detail by the working group to proceed, and that they have to fill in those gaps it's the policy implementation dividing line all over again, and you never know how close to the line or which side you're falling at any given time. And certainly if you have 10 people in the room and 5 of them are staff, then you're going to have 10 different opinions, I think, on where that should be. However, in this particular case, I don't see a problem with the specific language. I guess I'd be happy to leave the language as it currently reads in the report. I'm asking staff if they can explain, is there something in here? Is there a minefield that we're not seeing? Bob is up, but let's defer to Marika to answer that specific question, Bob, and then we'll come back to you first. So, Marika, welcome.
This is Marika. A way to possibly address this, I note as well, I think in previous working groups, we've also had instances where specific language was suggested, but where I think, when actually implementing it, either, due to preceding paragraphs or where something gets inserted, there may be a need to, tweak certain words. So if the recommendation is written in such a way that, amended as follows, that gives basically zero flexibility to staff to, change a the or an a or remove things. So, you can consider just changing this, for example, to the working group will recommend that the TDRP be amended along the following lines. And you still suggest a specific language. And, in this case, I haven't looked at or I'm not aware that there's anything specific in here that poses an issue, but at least that, would give some flexibility to staff if there is a need to either reword basically part of where it may fit into the TDRP, or because of preceding or language that follows afterwards, or certain definitions, or I don't know what. And again, as there will likely be an implementation review team, that team could always, of course, then still come in and say, hey, you're actually changing something that we did debate and is considered substantial, so we don't agree if you do that. But if there are little tweaks here and there just to make it fit better, hopefully that is then possible, while the way it's worded now may be too stringent.
Okay, thank you, Marika. So my understanding then is that not necessarily that there's anything particular wrong with this language, it's just that it's tying the hands of staff. There's really no wiggle room for implementation because we have called it out specifically and put it in quotes. So it seems like perhaps we could fix that by saying something along the lines of the working group recommends that the TDRP be amended as follows, or be amended to reflect the language below, comma, or equivalent. Something like that would probably give you sufficient, give staff the ability to make sure that it is conforming not only with the rest of the recommendations in this report, but also IRTPC and then the TDRP as it reads today. Would that address the staff concern? I got a green check mark from Marika and from Avery. Bob, you were in the queue earlier. Did you want to weigh in on this as well?
Yeah, this is Bob. No, I think Marika captured what I was going to say perfectly, so I'll just concur with her comments.
Okay. All right, thanks. So, Lars, hopefully I think we've captured that. We just gives, I don't know if we build in a little bit of a discretion there for staff to modify the language as necessary to make sure that it fits. Green check mark. Okay. Let's see. We have some chatter going on in the chat box, and I want to make sure we capture that into this sentence here. Arthur has a couple of points here. One is that the final sentence. Okay. I jumped to the page 42. I don't know if that's for everybody or just me. I can't move the document. If we could go back to the language that we had on page 16. Someone who has control.
Sorry, James. I don't know what happened. I'll put it back up just 1 second.
Okay, awesome. Thanks. It went to comment 16 instead of page 16. So let's we're going to go back to some of the things that Arthur was weighing in on here. The final sentence, we want to remove it to reduce its legal nature. I think that that says something about the courts are always at your disposal or something like that. Process remains subject to any rulings in court of applicable jurisdiction. Well, that's kind of true for every recommendation and every policy ever. So I think, to Arthur's point, does it really add anything by including that in the language here? And I think particularly if we're being a little more discretionary in our recommendation to staff, then that can probably be removed. What are the thoughts from the group on this? Did we lose anything by dropping that last sentence? I don't see a lot of... Barbara, go ahead.
Thank you, James. It's Barbara. I was just going to say I don't think that you do, because I think that there could very well be language elsewhere in the policy that indicates that you know, the parties are required to comply with any modifications that are requested by a court. I think that probably covers it. But I would defer to the legal eagles to make that final determination.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, it probably, and even if it needs to be in the policy, it probably only needs to be in there once and not attached to every recommendation. Okay, and a green check mark. Okay, so good intervention there, Arthur. Let's move on then to the second point here about change on 13. Just need to be flexible staff. Okay, I think that's in line with what we were saying earlier. And then you said null and void is a figure of speech. And we had, I think we had some comments on this last time around, didn't we, that we had void or null or voidable or something like that. And I certainly don't want to introduce either a colloquialism or a legal term of art. So can we say something, can we strike null and void and just say invalidated? Does that make everyone happy? Okay, got a green check mark from Lars, from Bob. I think that captures what we're trying to say. Angie and Holly, okay. Let's do that one, Lars. We'll just change null and void to invalidated. I probably should. If anyone has a thesaurus open, maybe we can come up with something better, but that's just shooting from the hip. So, okay, and both of Arthur's online personas are agreeing, or one of them is agreeing, the other one's not. Okay, I think we're good then on this page. So the next change occurs on page 18. This is a big one, and I'm going to recommend that we maybe keep pressing through some of the smaller ones and circle back to this. But let me tee up the issue. If you go to page 18, and it's in the second to the last paragraph there, comments of the GDD team are noting that there is no inter-registrant dispute policy identified as part of IRTPC. The implementation team doesn't plan to create this. So I believe we have created a bit of a paradox here, and I'm picturing like a snake, you know, eating itself or eating its own tail or whatever, is that we have IRTPC, the recommendations, saying, oh, you know, here's a new policy, and if there's a dispute in this policy, you should use the TDRP. And the TDRP is like, here's this dispute policy, and if you run into trouble, you should do whatever comes out of IRTPC. So it's kind of this circular recursive reference between C and B. I think it's a problem. I have an idea on how we can untangle it. It's not going to be pretty, but, you know, generally, you know, I think our two choices are we press forward without it, which leaves a huge void in ICANN policy and almost probably makes D and possibly C unimplementable by staff, or we try to tackle this issue, which is going to take a little bit more time and work on our part, and I think we're probably going to have to do the latter. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. You know, one thing to note, because you know, I believe indeed the comment that was made by the GDD team is of course correct, because you know, we didn't foresee, or at least the working group didn't foresee it at the time, that a, a separate dispute resolution a policy would be created for the change of registrant policy. However, I think what partly, and I believe what this working group discussed as well, or at least I would foresee as part of implementation of IRGP Part C, is that you know, there would be a path that is identified in case people have issues or complaints under the new policy and direct them where to go. You know, the likely recourse is you know, new kinds of complaints form that you know, ICANN Compliance provides on the website, which, for example, outlines in which scenarios you know, you have a valid complaint to go to the compliance team and you know, in which cases they would have enforcement mechanisms in case indeed the new policy is violated. So I think at least from my personal perspective, what I had more envisioned indeed is by the time IRGPC is implemented and there is indeed a clear framework in place on you know, what the policy entails and what the kind of scenarios are that fall underneath that, what happens if indeed there is a violation of that policy. And as I said, you know, I think as well as in the current policy, there's of course an escalation mechanism with the TDRP, but before that, there are, of course, other steps that parties can take to get issues resolved. They wanted to speak to registrars. One is to you know go to ICANN Compliance, and you know, last course is the TDRP. So I think you know the idea was that first you know, the group or the council would evaluate. Okay, so what comes in place on the IRTP Part C? Does it actually the new policy? Does that cover all those you know case studies that are included in the annex? Because some of them I think would be covered on the new policy, and of course any you know, violations of that would also be indirectly covered because you know, compliance can enforce if the policy is not respected. But it still, I think, at that stage doesn't take away that a potential conclusion could also be, is something more needed? And I don't know if that's something that will be immediately obvious at the time when IRTP Part C is implemented, or whether that is one of those cases where, you know, further data may be needed to see once, you know, the recommendations from this PDP as well as IRTPC are implemented, does that have an impact on the number of complaints that compliance gets? Or is it actually the reverse? The number of complaints they receive actually go much further up because, you know, on the one hand, the TDRP wasn't adapted, and on top of that, a new policy was implemented which didn't have sufficient dispute resolution mechanisms available to, you know, escalate certain issues. So I think that's a bit, yeah, and maybe that's not properly worded here, but that was at least my understanding a little bit of where we were heading with this recommendation.
Okay, thanks, Marika, and I do appreciate you providing some context and substance to the comment. You know, I think that this is probably one of the reasons why we should probably just put a button in this particular comment, because I think it shows up again on page 42. It's really a reflection of the same issue in the comment on page 42. So I feel as though we should probably set this one aside for right now, because I think that we perhaps have a chance of getting through all the rest on today's call, and then the next call will be focused primarily on this issue, because I believe it is it is a fundamental concern. It is, in some respects, or in some regards, it's what this working group was seeking to address or improve. It certainly is mentioned, if not in our issues report and charter, it certainly is undercoding underpinning a lot of the comments received, including some of the data and statistics that we received from compliance. So it's a big issue, and I think that we should give it the attention that is required. And so I would recommend moving on with the understanding that we're going to spend a little bit more time on this particular comment. Okay. So if we could then skip to page 22, which is, I believe, the next GDD comment, unless we encounter one of Alan's along the way. Okay, so the comment from page 20 on page 22 from staff is, that this is some recommendations about how to provide some helpful resources on the ICANN webpage, as well as how to make sure that that's sufficiently visible to visitors who maybe are coming to the ICANN webpage for the first time, and we don't want to overload them with a bunch of, you know, let's say policy and accountability and IANA and new GTLD issues when they really just want to file a complaint or get some information about transfer issues or read up a little bit on what their options are. I think the concern from staff, and I may be reading too much into this or reading it incorrectly, but the concern from staff is that there's been a fairly significant redesign of the ICANN homepage since this was originally worded, and that some of the things that we're referencing here, like the Have a Problem page or the Quick Link page or some of those other headers, either no longer exist or they may be moved or called something else. So I think that the I think generally it seems like this is referencing, you know, whether or not this is, and it says it's not overly helpful to inexperienced registrants, and the comment from staff is, this, you know, is this criticism warranted, that it's not overly helpful? I think that, you know, I guess this is a matter of opinion. I like the, I think the idea is that, that if you go to ICANN.org, there is a quick links box. It does have as the fourth item unsolicited renewal or transfer. I don't know if that's abundantly clear. I would like to see it say something like, unauthorized transfer might be first, and unsolicited renewal, or whether they belong in the same button. I guess the working group's role is probably not to get involved in designing the user interface of ICANN's website. I think the goal here is that we want to ensure that this is these links and these resources are, painfully conspicuous for someone who's maybe first interaction or first awareness of ICANN is they have a transfer problem. So I see some, I see Holly agrees, and I see Arthur is up with a comment. So Arthur, go ahead.
Hi, James. Thanks for the word. Arthur Zonneberg here. I'd like to speak on behalf of our customers and say for starters that this this quick link page is not not in Dutch, but more importantly, it just drops in the middle of the story and immediately starts with a Q&A from a perspective that supposes or that assumes, that presupposes all kinds of knowledge. Just the first sentence, if you will. In November 2004, ICANN announced a transfer policy that applies to all accredited GTLD registrars across the globe. How does that answer my question, and what does that have to do with me as a registrant? Next sentence. If you have attempted to transfer a domain name from one registrar to another registrar and the transfer was denied, the quote-unquote losing registrar is required to provide the quote-unquote gaining registrar with a notice and a specific reason for the denial. What is losing and gaining, and what are valid reasons? What's going on here? You know, as an end user, you have no idea what this is. If you're not familiar with the terminology, this might as well be in Chinese. That's my comment on that. So in response to the comments from the GDD, no.
Okay, thanks, Arthur. I like how you ended that there. Certainly, I think that we could probably spend quite a bit of time cleaning up and improving the usefulness and the utility of the ICANN website. Registrars in particular have a number of issues with, making sure that the materials are organized in a way that our customers can reach them. I guess we have two general approaches here. Do we want to try to fix these issues in our report, in our recommendations? Do we want to call out the attention to the problem that we believe to have identified, which is that this is not clear unless you, it's still very inaccessible to non-veterans of ICANN and the ICANN process. And I think that it's very, very important to step out of the bubble that we all live in this industry and in ICANN, the community, and ICANN, the organization, and realize that, some people are registrants, and they don't know they're registrants because they bought a different package. They bought a website, or they bought an email package, and so it's using terminology like registrants, which seems so basic, I think, to so many of us, is still, unfortunately, needs to be explained because it is such an unwieldy term. It's not something that people, unless you're doing this as part of your job, it's not something that it creeps into your vocabulary on a daily basis. So one thing that I do like is that the new website has little mouse overs. So if you hold your cursor over an underlying term, it offers a definition in the bottom. I think that, they should be commended for that change. And I do like the fact that domain name transfer is listed at the second item where the domain name transfer is listed right below new GTLDs. I think between those two topics and who is, you've probably got, the majority of the new first-time visitors to ICANN's website covered. I think that we can leave our comment here as it stands. We can I'll go to Holly. Holly, go ahead.
My one comment is that maybe it's a little bit of danger in describing exactly where something is, because we have no idea if ICANN is once again going to redo the website and everything we say is changed yet again. But I do take Arthur's point, and I think your description is also very good. This, whatever it is, it has to be written so you don't have to go through more than, say, one click and your ad information. And it is written in layperson's terminology and have the recommendation in terms of, not necessarily in terms of how the website looks now, but your point that we have to use language that is absolutely layperson's language, and it has to be very visible from the homepage as to where you go. And using those terminology, I'd probably leave it at that. Thanks.
It's Alan. Could I get in?
Alan, yes, please go ahead. Thank you, Holly. Go ahead, Alan.
I think their comment is relevant in that, yes, the details are going to change, which by the time it's published, they'll change again. However, many of the changes that have been done on the website, and I'm having an ongoing discussion with Chris Gift on that, have not been positive. They have obscured things that used to be clear. It's going to happen again. So I think some sort of wording saying this must be from a novice user's perspective, and since someone coming in to try to solve a problem can solve it, needs to be there. We can't ignore the subject, although we shouldn't be specific on what is on what page. That will surely change. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Holly and Alan. And since Alan's not on the Adobe, I'll note that he has a couple of green check marks there as well. So where do we want to go with this comment, folks? I think that we can leave our text as it stands. If we want to address the staff comment that it's overly critical, I think that they're zoomed, I'm guessing, but I believe that they're picking up on the term where it says not overly helpful. I think we can say something to the effect of information about IRTP and TDRP that is still can be confusing to inexperienced registrants. And if we make that change, I think we get out of the mode where we're just criticizing the web content, and we get more into a constructive and helpful mode without throwing rocks. I see we've got a green check mark on that, and hopefully that we can address that comment and move on. But I think it is something that it's just such a big issue, outside the scope of this working group, and it refers to all the terminology and all the lingo and all the acronyms and the fact that, if you don't follow this 40 hours a week, that, you can get confused really quickly. And I think, as we pointed out, I, who have been working in this space for 7 years and working at registrar for 8 years, I still get confused when I try to transfer domain names. So what hope does anyone have if you know, I'm not putting myself up on a pedestal here or as a benchmark, but I think it's interesting that this process is so confusing that even folks who are very, very close to it can still get confused and start scratching their head about what they do next. So, but let's move on here, and let's then go to the next comment, which I believe is on page 24. I believe there are two comments on page 24. We go down to that page. Oh, I'm sorry. We've got Alan's on page 23 is one of Alan's edits where he mentioned that the website should be clearly accessible or integrated into the ICANN registrant's benefits and responsibilities page. I don't have any issues with that, particularly since registrars and other contracted parties are required to link to that page. I think having that page reference this user-friendly website would be helpful. So I didn't see any issues with that. And if anyone has any objections, please let me know. But I think that's a good suggestion. So and we see green check marks in the chat. So we'll move on then to page 24, where there are two comments. The first one is where we say something in a recommendation about, we should just recommend that this as a best practice that registrars should encourage resellers to display links. And the group recommends this community to all ICANN registrars, for example, through their radar. You know, I think that the issue here from GDD, I'm probably speculating a little bit, but I think that radar at some point will be going away in favor of a new system that was a new platform that's being deployed that will support both registries and registrars, PLD operators. And so I think what they're saying here is that they don't want any recommendations for policy or best practice tied to a specific system, particularly one that may be end of life here in the next year or so. So, you know, I'm fine with that. Just striking that, for example, and then just we'll do, you know, communicated to all ICANN accredited registrars, full stop. I don't know if anybody has any concerns about that, or staff, please weigh in if I've misread your, you know, the intention behind that comment, because I want to make sure we've captured that. Amy's given me a green check mark, so thank you, Amy. Okay, and then moving down to the next comment from GDD is that that this impact statement is not necessarily an impact, but rather instructions for the implementation team. And let's read through what that is and make sure we've captured it correctly. Working group expects that the Yo, yes.
Yeah, James, I had one on 14 also.
One on 14. Do you mean the one prior, Alan?
Yeah, the one I think we were just talking about, I think, was 14.
Yes.
I'm in the car right now.
Yes.
I can't see the numbers.
Nope, you're right, Alan. There's a couple of balloons right on top of each other, and I just missed it. So, please, Alan also wanted to change the wording of the introduction of this. From the working group recommends that in addition, as a best practice, ICANN accredited registrars, blah, blah, blah. Alan wanted to say something, I believe, like working group recommends as an additional best practice.
Now you've got it. It backwards.
Is that right?
Yeah. No, you've got it backwards. The current wording says as an additional best practice.
Okay.
14 is almost redundant because it's the change between 13. So what we said is 14 should become, in addition, as a best practice, registrars should do such and such. As
okay.
An additional best practice, it's not clear what it's additional to, so it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Right, and it almost implies that there's another list of best practices that's coming before this somehow that, that it's being tacked onto. So, yeah, I agree with that. You know, I actually think that we can just take out the fact that it's additional and just say the working group recommends that as a best practice, and who cares if it's the only one or if it's part of a list?
Yeah, I can live with that.
Okay. Lars, did you catch that? Because it is ambiguous, as Alan points out. So Okay, green check mark from Lars. All right, sorry for skipping over that one, Alan. And, you know, if you want to jump on your plane now, we've covered yours for sure.
Not on a plane heading to a meeting, but that was the last one, and I will be dropping off in a few minutes because I'm about to enter the parking lot. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for and stay safe, you know, hands-free, my man. Okay, so we're going then to the comments. Again, this is the impact of this recommendation or this best practice. The working group expects that transfer dispute information on ICANN website is clearly accessible from the ICANN Registrant's Benefits and Responsibilities page, expects it improves availability of transfer dispute-related information, and also lead to registrants to have an improved understanding regarding the dispute options. So the GDD team notes that this is a direction for implementation. You know, I guess it could be. I think that we could say something along the lines of that since we've already listed it above, we can say something along the lines of, you know, the working group expects that highlighting the visibility of this information ought to lead, you know, it's really just focusing on the second paragraph there. I think that's, I'm fine with that. I just want to make sure that we don't lose anything important if we were to just drop that other paragraph. I think it's incorporated up in working group number 13. Recommendation number 13 has already captured the statement that we make in the impact statement for number 14. So I'm fine with just dropping that. Does anyone have any concerns? Because it's just repeating the recommendation, the previous recommendation. So okay, got a couple of green check marks here. Okay, so we're making progress. This thing's getting cleaned up. We've got 15 minutes left to go. The next one is on page 26. And why can't I scroll? Oh, there we go. Let's see. If we scroll down to 26, we see, here we go. So the staff comment is, again, with the impact statement, the working group expects to see consistent application of uniform sanctions for policy violations in IRTP and TDRP and where possible new developed policies. And the GDD team is saying that this is, again, implementation direction and not an anticipated impact. So I'm struggling with this one, folks, because I think that we want to put something here, but anything that we say probably could be read through the lens of implementation. So anybody want to help me out with this one?
James, it's Alan.
Yeah, Alan, go ahead.
I don't see the words they use, but I'm getting a little bit upset about this. We have worked for the last number of years to a stage where PDP groups can specify details pretty close to implementation to make sure there's no misunderstanding. And now suddenly we're being told it's implementation, we can't say it anymore. And I'm starting to have a real problem. I've got to drop off now, but thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And we've got some green check marks as well, and a hand from Marika. Maybe Marika can help us understand where staff wants us to go.
This is Marika, and I'm not necessarily here to interpret what the DGT team suggests, but I think what they're trying to say here, or what my expectation is that they're trying to say here, is that not necessarily that the working group cannot provide guidance in relation to implementation, but that this section specifically talks about the impact of the recommendations. So the underlying thought might be that the focus here is actually more on the impact of the recommendation, and specific guidance in relation to implementation would maybe be more appropriate in a separate or in different section. And maybe a way to reword this could be more along the lines of, you know, the working group expects that the application of uniform sanctions for policy violations in the RET and TDRP, you know, would result in whatever the language may have been used above and as part of the rationale as well, and more phrase it in that way. So as I said, you know, maybe that's not too the GDD point, but that's at least how I read it. I don't think it's to say that the working group cannot provide guidance on implementation, but it's more that it may not be appropriate in this specific section, which is supposed to talk about the expected impact.
Okay, thanks, Marika. I think that helps to some extent here. I think that part of what maybe triggering this reaction from staff is the word of expects to see. The working group expects to see. It's almost like setting out instructions or defining requirements for implementation. And I think that we could change this. Something along the lines of the working group anticipates that consistent application of uniform sanctions for policy violations in IRTP and TDRP and, where possible, newly developed policies, will result in, here's the payoff, will result in a clearer and more concise understanding of compliance or enforcement of policies for contracted parties and users, or something along those lines, I think would probably get us out of the issue that we have. I agree with you, Alan. I think that we seem to be getting it wrong no matter what we do. I think when it comes to implementation of policy, Alan probably dropped off. I also see staff as when you use the word expect to see, that's kind of like you're defining a outcome for the implementation team to hit or a bar that they have to get over, and I think that that's probably not what we were intended here. So, I think, Lars, can you maybe change that something to, the working group anticipates that the rest of the sentence, will benefit registrants and contracted parties by providing clearer enforcement structures. And we'll just leave it at that. Green check mark from Lars and Holly. And, hopefully that gets us out of the doghouse from staff here. Okay, so then let's move next to page 28. Is where the next comment lives. The next staff comment. So let's go down there. Okay. This one. Oh, yes. So the GDD team wonders how this could be done in a way that assures that the transfer contact is actually reached. It says this is our recommendation that possible improvements include transmission of FOAs via SMS or an authorization through an interactive website. And I think what they're getting at, and I don't mean to put words in their mouths, but I think what staff is saying here is that, email and SMS are notification systems, but an interactive website is more of a passive system. You actually have to go to the website. I think what the working group was envisioning was that you could, for example, log in using some sort of login credentials, access a website that would clearly determine that you are who you say you are and capture your authorization for the transfer. That's, I think, what we were driving at. So, but here's the thing. I don't really believe that we're saying here is that these are possible improvements. So what I'd like to propose is that we say example improvements or improvements, could include, and then just leave this as it currently reads, because, we're not trying to fix the problem. We're leaving service providers open to innovate new ways. I mean, maybe someone could come up with an app or something for, who knows? The sky's the limit, and I don't think that we should either be limiting the possible ways that you could pull this off. I think that we just want to capture the recommendation that other delivery mechanisms and communication mechanisms could be available. So I would like to propose that we change possible to example, and then we put could include as rather than include, and that we just move on from this comment. And I don't know if there's anyone who has any strong feelings to the contrary. But I think that captures what we were trying to get across in this recommendation. We got a green check mark from Holly on this. The next comment, a little further down on the page, is that, again, we're not, from staff, is that we're putting some instructions into an impact statement. This is not an impact, and that is that the working group expects a data-supported analysis of FOA effectiveness as part of the implementation of Recommendation 18. So here's my first question. Where is Recommendation 18? The one above it is 17, and then there's nothing. So just a numbering problem, maybe? I don't know. Lars, can you maybe highlight that? There's it. Recommendation 18. It's a little further down. So is this in the right place? Or are we just numbering? We're just referencing the wrong number, maybe? Yeah, I think that this is just, it means recommendation 17. That's all. Okay, so we can fix that. So Lars, can you make a note that we need to fix 18 to 17? And then I think, again, we say something like the working group expects, which sounds like we're giving directions to the implementation team. Here's what I recommend. Instead of saying expects, I think we say the working group anticipates that recommendation, the implementation of recommendation 18 will result in further the collection of data that could yield could support future analyses of FOA effectiveness, and something like that I think will capture what we're trying to say without, tying the hands of staff. Barbara's going to rescue me. Barbara, go ahead.
I don't know about that, James, but this is Barbara for the record. I'm wondering if you can say something to the effect that, recommendation, I'm not sure, I think it's 17 at this point, will require the collection of data in order to, I'm now at a loss, but basically we require the collection of data in order to perform analysis to determine the FOA's effectiveness or something to that effect? Does that help us or hurt us?
No, I think that that's correct. I think we should go back then to the language of the recommendation itself, which is up a little bit further. So the group recommends that the operability of FOA should not be limited to email. Possible improvements include such. And then I think it does say any such innovations must, however, have auditing capabilities, as this remains one of the key functions of the FOA. We can reference that in our – is that what you're thinking, is that in addition, the working group anticipates that the audit data collected as part of implementation of Recommendation 18 will support future analyses of FOA effectiveness. I think that might be part of it. I don't see any check mark. I do see Holly has an interesting comment in the chat, which is that the header for this section is expected impact, and so we keep teasing out the word expected because it's maybe tripping the staff or triggering staff to say that this is an implementation instruction rather than an impact statement. So that's a good observation, Holly. We are just forming our response in a way that reflects the heading of the section. So I'm okay with changing it to anticipated. Either way, it's fine. But I think that when we say expected and then the next sentence after it is not a result but an action, I think that's what's getting staff's attention. As you say, expected action sounds like implementation, whereas if you say expected benefit, then that that addresses the impact requirement. So that's my thinking on this. I'm certainly open to being proven wrong here. Aubrey's got a green check mark. Barbara, I don't know if that addresses your question about data collection through the audit. Arthur's got his hand up, but can we go to Barbara first, Arthur, so we can close this one off?
Sure.
Okay, thanks, Arthur. Barbara, go ahead.
Thanks, gentlemen. I think it gets us a little bit closer. I'm not certain that we're there completely yet. I mean, I think that, you know, by recommending the recommendation that we're making, I think that it's, you know, the expected impact is that, yes, we can make that recommendation, but I think that we also need to be prepared to be able to, that recommendation may end up driving some additional analysis that we need to do in order to determine, you know, what's going to be the best way forward for either implementing an FOA in different formats than they are today or, you know, future elimination or consideration of future elimination, I should say.
Okay, and I think that that sort of tees up the next recommendation. I agree with you, Barbara, and I think that sort of tees up the next recommendation, which is analyzing relevant data to determine whether or not this overall process, including FOA collection and all that other stuff, is improved. So I think I think it does what you're wanting it to do, because it segues into the next recommendation. So we have 2 minutes remaining. We're almost at the end. Arthur has the last word, and then we'll close off for today and continue our work on the list next week. Arthur, you're up.
Hi, Jane. Thanks. Arthur Zonneberg here for HostNet. I just noted in this last section on charter question F that the review or analysis is done at a later stage, so in the future, after the policy has been implemented. I would urge the working group to include a recommendation to start measuring straight away, because if we don't measure, then there will be nothing to review. So what I'm still missing from the recommendation is a call to start implementing and defining the metrics as soon as possible, so that the next time that we review this policy or this IRTP, that we have some data to base performance on. And there are some other things that have been rewritten that I would like to respond to, but there is no more time left. So I will do so via email.
Okay, thanks, Arthur. So we're at the top of the hour. I think that's an important point, and I think it raises one of two questions, which is, does it make sense to measure something that you know is in a state of change because your initial measurements may be invalidated by that change? Or
yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Or alternative, well, I know your opinion. I'm pointing out both opinions. The other side of it would be, does it make sense to measure it both in order to have a before and after snapshot so that you can understand the impact of the change? And I think that there can be a case made for each side of that. So let's put a hold on this because we are at the end of our call. We've got that issue, and we have the issue regarding the dispute mechanism as part of IRTPC that I think we can take up both of those issues on the list and intersessionally, and then beginning in our next call, which will be the same time, same channel next week. Lars, if you can, please send out an updated version at your earliest possible opportunity, and make sure that that's sent. And I think everyone can then start to, if you haven't already run this by, if you are representing a constituency or a stakeholder group, now would be the time, I think, to start sharing that with your group as well, particularly the language of the recommendations. I think aside from some minor changes, we're getting pretty close on that. So with that, I would say thank you, everyone. Good work today. Very productive session. We will meet next week. We will tackle these last few issues, and we're getting very close to the end. So thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, James.
Thanks,
everybody.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Damon, if you can please stop the recording. Once again, that's the end of today's conference. Thank you, everyone, for joining.